Hi there, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of the Funtaka Junction Real Talk. I am excited to have you join us on another beautiful journey, another beautiful ride here at the Junction. With me in the studio today, I've got just my right hand man, the strong and chested one, Rasha Rasha. What's good, bro?
I mean, have you. Should we now call it the what's it called? The weight or the influence of Laika.
Yeah.
Because you said just my right hand. No. Just.
That's not to diminish your importance and your values. I'm not saying we'll be lopsided today.
No, I'm saying I guess the lady carries enough weight, you know. So she's going to be missed and fans are going to miss her, innit?
Yeah. Fun fact for those wondering why Laika is not a show today. She's got a vocal challenge. You know, this weather, I don't even understand what's going on. Weather and the dryness of the weather and the dust.
You know, I also...
It's causing wahala everywhere. People are losing their voices left, right, and center.
Yeah, I also realized that at some point, at intervals, it always feels like I'm going to have sore throats.
Did you get?
Yeah, so I kind of like quickly like just do something
take
about
some fluids,
it.
Yeah, you know, some just try and dig. So, if you're not careful, this period, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I'm trying to sound like a scientist now, but I'm sorry. I don't know the right terminology. Should I call them biomes and all that floating in the atmosphere this period?
Yeah.
With the elevated dust levels, I mean. So, you know, you probably want to stay hydrated more.
Yeah.
Right? You probably want to take a few antibiotics here and there just to fight any potential
bacterial infection. If you're going to choose between this weather and what we've had, you know...
Look, guess what?
This weather in the past, maybe... Three, four days, maybe like a week now. It's been a little better.
I'm not a big fan of this weather, to be honest.
I'm
because,
a big fan.
No, chill. This weather is not what we're used to. Some people think this is Hamattan. If you're in Lagos, what you're experiencing right now is definitely not Hamattan.
No, it's not Hamattan.
Right?
It's not Hamattan.
It's just a whole lot of dust.
It's not Hamattan.
To be honest.
It's not Hamattan.
Right? The coldness, that chill isn't quite there.
Yeah.
There's just an elevated level of dust in the atmosphere.
It's not Hamattan.
Yeah, I can't say I'm really enjoying it. But yeah, you're right in the sense that the humidity levels have dropped. And because of that, the heat that comes with it has sort of reduced. But in the nighttime, it goes back to factory setting. In my own area, Sha. In the nighttime, it gets really, really hot.
Maybe,
so I don't know.
Maybe in the past 2 days. But from like early last week, it was okay. Even in the night, it was still fine and all. And I mean, it's good. I'm just hoping that it doesn't go away so soon.
We'll see.
Guess what? I think I've said it before now. There was a time that Hamattan was kind of like out in Lagos, you know, that we were really feeling ourselves. Like we had this, you know, this smoke heat like coming out of your mouth.
Where was that?
Nah, that was a long time ago.
True. Well, interesting thing is, and I guess that's what they talk about when they're saying, we need to be careful about decarbonizing the environment and all of that.
Don't let us go there. Are we going to go
I'm
there?
I'm not saying climate change.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, it's obvious that when you take, for example, congested areas like Lagos State, there is a clear difference in how our weather has been over the years. In Lagos State, bad as it bad, during December and early January, you will have those Hamattan, cold wind periods. You feel it for a few weeks and it goes. Over the last 5 to 6, 7 years, that has actually not been the case. And it gets progressively worse. In fact, some years ago, the Hamattan will probably just come for like 2 days and go. Now, we don't even really feel actual cool breeze coming in from the equator. We just get a lot of dust. Right?
Yeah. But
so that shows that something really could be going on. And
nothing is going on.
Especially because it's Lagos. Number one, it's congested. The pollution is high.
Nothing is going on. All of those activities might be impacting. Nothing is going on.
All right, cool.
What is happening is that
what's happening?
We are not planning well. We don't have good town planning mechanism in place. You know the way it is in Lagos, like every open space, an opportunity to kind of, congest the place again and all and everything. Any open space, the landlord is not even thinking anything like, let's just plant something here and make it like that. I know they will put another small shop there and try to make money and all. That is
so
what,
do you agree that those kind of activities has an impact?
Yeah, but that is artificial. That's got anything to do with climate. Why is it that when you go outside of Lagos? Why is it that when you go outside of Lagos?
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody that was in Ogun State, you know, in the hinterland and all. And they was telling me like he was sleeping like a baby
of course,
at night. Like they don't even put a fan on, they don't put anything on.
Yeah.
Like that's the way they sleep and all.
Yeah.
It's because there is open space. There is not so much congestion, you know, in that area.
But you're still missing the point, Resh. Yeah. The point of climate change is we're not seeing climate change. There are different proponents who push the climate change agenda.
Mm.
The one that we are concerned with is the one that is being caused by human activity.
Yeah.
The climate change that is triggered by human activity. And what I'm saying is that the human activity in concentrated and congested places like Lagos State has an impact in how the weather and the climate forms within this
okay, I get what
that's the point I'm making. I'm saying, you know, because of all the pollution we put out, the congestion, you know, the clogging of spaces, the deforestation, all those things
fair
is kind of, you know, hampering and, and all, you know,
but that doesn't now mean
messing up with how Lagos State's weather and climate kind of works out.
So when people are now saying like the CO2, we need to reduce the CO2 emission, that's bull crap.
Yeah, that's part of
no,
it.
No, that's bull crap.
The CO2 emissions bullcrap. Are part of
bullcrap.
It.
Right? Bullcrap. Bullcrap. You know what they call CO2? I mean, I saw.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, let me hear you.
I saw an interview with Tucker Carlson. I mean, I think he was a scientist, one scientist guy and all.
Yeah.
The guy that was talking about Bill Gates not sending me any money, that I doesn't want any money from Bill Gates, you know, and all. And he was saying, like, the CO2 is called the gas of life, you know, because it actually. What's it called? Gives life, you know, to the trees.
To plantation, I agree.
Give life to, I mean, yeah, all those stuff and all. And the more they are, you know, in the atmosphere, the better for the trees and stuff. The only thing that we need to do, like you said, which I agree with, is that we should not congest where we're supposed to have flowers, where we're supposed to have trees and all. And you know the way they are cutting trees anyhow in Lagos now and all.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, so for me, I think those are the things that we just need to take care of.
Yeah, that's the idea. And it's the congestion of all of these activities. Like, you know, they're looking at certain places that are notorious for emission of CO2s, right? For example, manufacturing locations, your typical, like so in Nigeria now where oil and gas is important, all these guys that are in the Niger Delta drilling oil, you know, emitting a lot of gases and flaring those gases. Those areas, someone was saying something in Port Harcourt, and they were really lamenting that in Port Harcourt, there are places in Port Harcourt that if you don't close your windows 24/7 and your doors, if you by mistake leave your window open, by morning time, you wake up and see that everywhere in your room is covered with black soot. Your kitchen, black soot. Your toilet, black soot. Like, there is tangible black carbon littered everywhere in Port Harcourt because of the flaring of gases going on there. And that is where the, you know, the push for reducing emissions comes in, those kind of places. You're saying for those guys that are manufacturing, drilling oil and drilling gas, how can you reduce your flaring so that you don't contaminate the air and cause, I mean, I'm not saying global warming now. I'm not talking about global warming.
Okay,
that's a different thing entirely.
Better, yeah.
I'm talking about the pollution that your activity has in, you know, I mean, the effect it has in putting out pollutants, you know, emissions that affect the people that live within that particular locale. Now, in the grand scheme of things, you are right in the sense that when you look at the whole earth as a whole, all our activities cannot be enough to be causing global impact or global warming. I don't agree. That global warming agenda is a different thing because there are only small pockets of locations around the world where intensive activity is going on that is generating serious emissions. However, what I think a lot of this regulation is trying to achieve is within those areas where you are doing intensive activity that leads to pollution, how do you manage the emission of those effluents and those dangerous particulates? How do you manage so that the people within that locale are not adversely affected? That's the area of, you know, monitoring and control of emissions that I will be interested in, not the whole global climate.
Yes,
agenda.
And that should be left to individual governments to take care of.
Yeah, I agree. Municipals.
Yeah, and our own environment, we know the way, we know our own issue in Nigeria. Our issue in Nigeria is bad leadership. Our issue is Nigeria has always been bad leadership across board. So when we're talking about that climate, I mean, that was commission and stuff and all, it is still leadership, inefficiencies that is causing stuff like that to kind of go on and stuff and all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for me, I'm not part of the people that will come and say,
COP 20 years.
Yeah, or 2030, we have to have achieved a complete reduction of that and all. So, you know, they are even recalling all the EVs, electronic vehicles and stuff.
Yeah, Tesla.
You know, Europe have, I mean, not even Tesla. Tesla is doing well. All those Ford, Chrysler and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
And all. Geely and all the rest of them. They are recalling all their electric vehicles.
Why are they recalling?
Because, They said, what did they call that? Business investment gone bad. That has gone solvent. I mean, insolvent. I mean, what did they call
in
it?
In what sense? Like the EV vehicles are not selling.
Yeah, they are not selling. They are becoming more of, you know, a liability because of, what's this thing called? Now, if you are replacing parts of your
maintenance
and stuff and everything. Yeah. So it's not as.
Yeah, I mean, it's not there. Yeah, yet. The whole EV thing is more of just like.
It's a ruse.
Just something that doing so that they can feel like that they are, you know, doing
exactly
something.
That's the thing, that's the reason why
economically it's not a viable project.
That's the reason
now,
why
or concept
it is. I mean, and the argument now is that government should get out of business and just be there to make sure that there is a conducive environment for entrepreneurs, you know, to kind of do business. Do you think that if they realize that electronic vehicle is a viable, you know, option,
they would rush into it and they don't need any
government to kind of do all that and all. Yeah. So what people are saying is that economists are saying is government should kind of just leave that alone. Creating conducive environment for entrepreneurs to thrive, you know, and all, and let their creativity go to work. You are not now the one that is going to be legislating that we're going to that. All the money that has been spent now is almost like don't enter gutter.
Yeah.
It's not really.
A lot of the renewable projects that have been funded, you know, a good number of them are not viable, to be honest. It's money going under the sink. And the question is, how long will this go on before we come to the realization that maybe this whole transition thing needs to happen organically? And you can't really speed it up. You can't really leave it alone now.
It's humans trying to play God. Leave it alone. You know,
it's a good idea for us to have that roadmap and try to get there.
That's what I think. The thing with it is that you found oil in the ground. The only thing that you just need to do is refine it and make it useful for yourself and all.
Yeah.
That mystery, we should just leave it alone. Do you get? Whatever, I mean, has been kind of like open to us for discovery and stuff, let that happen, like you said, let that happen organically and let it go on like that and all. Yeah. So all those restriction and trying to play God and telling everybody that in the next so, everybody would have to da-da-da and all and everything, that's not going to work. That's not going to fly. Yeah, really. Yeah, that's just what me am.
I mean, interesting to see how that works out. I mean, the whole COP thing started from, I think, COP 26 or 25. It's been five years in the making now.
Yeah,
I would like to see how that matures.
You should go and sit down.
You know, what milestones we're able to actually achieve, especially with the developed countries, because they are the ones that have committed to much faster timelines, you know. But some of them have given 2030.
Should be there.
Some have given 2025.
The Gates is the one that is saying that everybody should start eating synthetic meat and all those stuff. I think a country is even telling Bill Gates to get lost out of your country. Shouldn't even give them anything. Shouldn't even give them any advice again. I should just leave them alone.
Yeah.
I know.
Let's talk about a bit about home, Nigeria. Welcome to February, by the way. It's a new month.
It's the month of love.
Gradually,
it's
the
month of brotherly love.
Which one is brotherly love again?
No, there is a lot of love
it's
flying
Valentine.
Around.
There's nothing brotherly about Valentine's.
I'm telling you that because February is my month.
Oh, really? Yeah,
so, and I know what happens in February.
Are you starting to announce your birthday so that we can give, we can ask your account number?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that, well, that, that's in order. That one is in order as well.
We'll drop your account number after the show for our well-meaning listeners to celebrate your birthday. February, what's your birthday, Resh?
17th.
Oh, 17th interesting.
Of February, just 3 days after Val.
Okay.
I don't know why they didn't put me on Val's Day. I don't know.
What would have happened?
My mom should have just allowed it to come on Val's Day.
What would have happened?
If you'd
have
been a lover boy. My
certified lover boy. But I mean, yeah, it should be the month of love. And you know what happens? How typically in past years during this period, there's a lot of buzz around Valentine, you know, people using. Making jokes around if your boyfriend doesn't buy you this buy you that, does know that you are single, and then there's a lot of hype around money moving around and exchanging
that's
hands,
the month,
right?
A lot of brothers go broke.
Do you understand? and it's always very exciting to see. So it's a case of who can outdo, you know, who, right?
Yeah.
And get all the paranoids and trumpet saxophones to play music for you. But this period, I'm seeing a few vendors here and there, but that buzz around, you know, turning up for your babe or your guy, it's kind of really muted this period. I don't know if it's a dollar, you know, issue that's causing it, or and it just be naturally. Everybody just trying to hold on to one or two, 2K that's in their pocket. Do you see this year being a year where, you know, as usual, lovers are splashing the dough?
This year is a year of introspection. A year of introspection. And you know, don't forget that we've been on this introspection thing for a while.
For like eight years.
So the one that what's it called? Oga Tinubu now brought now another level. So people are kind of like, you know, I know, but I really don't think that Nigerians are having it easy, you know. So there is a lot of like, you know, I mean, trying to just cut your coats according to your fabric, you know, and, you know, just get along, really.
I was going to say that in November, or was it November or early December, when the dollar crossed 1,000, some people speculated about that by 2024, the dollar will reach 1.5. And all of us were like, hell no. I mean, I know things are bad, but things can't get that bad. 1.5. The country's going to close up if it ever touches 1.5. No, that's not possible. And we're making fun of economists that predicted that. And it's didn't even wait for 3 months.
Mm.
Just here in January, we saw the meteoric fall.
You don't fly.
Of the naira to the dollar.
You don't fly.
That crossed 1.5 in January. Nah. And I think that I haven't seen this come to reality. Nigerians are actually just stunned. I think we're all just collectively stunned at how bad and how quickly things deteriorated.
And I think
we've not even caught our breath to even react to it. Yeah, like, we're all still in shock.
I think our endurance to bullshit, pardon my language, our endurance to bull crap, I don't know, maybe it's our Achilles heel, because, I mean, I don't think there is any country that can endure this, I mean, consistent leadership failure year in, year out.
It's bad all over the place, though.
Like, yeah, but really I don't think everywhere. It's as bad as it is in Nigeria.
Are you sure?
I don't think it's as bad as it is in Nigeria. I mean, for people to even get food to eat is difficult, you know. And I don't know. And if the government is saying, because that's what they are preaching like, you know, what's it called? Shrewd with money spending and all that and everything and all and everything, and the moment the next thing that you hear is one minister has returned 30 billion naira, another one has put some money in his account or in our account and stuff and all, and this government are the one that is preaching that everybody should be prudent about how they spend money, about the way they do carry their stuff and all, and that doesn't go go well with a government that is telling the citizens to be, prudent with how they spend and all, and you guys are not doing the same, really. So for me, that is the reason why I feel like the government, they are having it too easy.
Mm.
They're having it too easy on them, really, you know. And I don't know, really. Let me not be a prophet of doom and all, but
yeah,
it can only go so far, really. If these government don't kind of, I mean, what's it called? Strap them there, I mean, their bootstrap, you know, and start to get to work and all. It can only do so much to the people before the people will just kind of like, okay, enough is enough, really. And that is when we'll now start seeing the extreme adverse effect of what the bad economic policies and stuff
has happened. I don't think we will ever get to the point where the people will say enough is enough.
Okay.
Nigerians are not just that kind of people, you know. We don't have it in us. The only time we have that in us is if the politicians, the cabal behind the scenes, are able to pull the strings
and setting and us up against ourselves. Yes,
and manipulate us to do that.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the only time you see Nigerians.
Now we get power. Yeah, to go kill our brothers.
We don't have the wisdom to actually do that and speak in one voice, right? So that's for the side.
That's
a bad indictment.
That's a slap on.
Yeah, it is. You know, it just shows the level.
That's a slap on Nigeria.
The level of naivety and foolishness that we display as people in general. But let's talk a bit about what the government is trying to do in arresting this rapid decline of the national currency. The CBN, under the leadership of the governor, Yemi Cardozo, has reeled out a couple of interventions and policies in the last few weeks to tackle these issues, right? Some of them have centered around asking the banks to sell out any excess foreign currency they have so that they can increase and push liquidity into the market. Some of those interventions have been around allowing the IMTOs, that's your Western Unions and your RIAs, your money transfer companies, to be able to, you know, bring in, you know, their dollars and repatriate it as well at their own price. So they've reduced the cap and they've removed the cap on those transactions, which will encourage those guys to also flow in dollars into the economy. Some of these policies they look good on paper. Hopefully, they can achieve the desired result. One additional measure that has been alleged and touted, which has also caused a lot of, you know, reactions from the people in public, because sometimes they say when you hear rumor, there's no smoke without fire. There is a indication that the Central Bank of Nigeria is mulling the idea of going after dollars that are in the domiciliary accounts of Nigerians. Apparently, according to data sources, there are about $30 billion stuffed up in dom accounts across the country, across different people. $30 billion. That's a lot of money. And the CBN, the allegation is that those monies are monies that are being hoarded. And because they're being hoarded and sitting idle in banks, they are part of the reason why there's a lot of scarcity in the market. There is a suspicion that the CBN is looking at the possibility of converting all of that dollar into Naira. And then going forward, any Nigerians will not be able to have access to dom accounts, unless you are receiving it as a salary or you are an expatriate. In which case, even if they do allow you to have a dom account, when the foreign currency comes to the account, it will be transferred or converted immediately by the bank to Naira at a prevailing market rate. So essentially saying that no Nigerian should have, you know, access to holding dollar in their bank account. Now, this kind of policy has had a lot of mixed reactions by different people, right? Some have said this might actually help. If we release all the dollars that have been hoarded, maybe there will be enough dollars in the economy and then the scarcity will reduce. Some have said that is a tool for disaster. If you do that, the current Naira will only get worse, because even though there's $30 billion in the CBN, in the bank accounts on paper, in reality, $30 billion in cash does not exist, and then they would still cause even more scarcity to be able to conclude that transaction. And then going forward, you have people who need dollars for legitimate purposes, like importing raw materials if you're a manufacturer, like paying for school fees, you know, like other legitimate needs. What are people going to do when you tell them that they can't have them accounts that collect dollars? You're going to cause anarchy into the economy, right? What do you think about this kind of policy, really? Do you think that if this turns out to be something that the government does, can help to arrest this decline and stabilize the currency? or is it just another recipe for disaster that we are waiting to find out?
Yeah, I think most of our, what's it called? Most of the heads of our parasitals, especially sensitive ones, maybe like the finance and the security and stuff, I think they like to be seen as working, you know? And I don't think that is the way they need to project themselves, really. You know, sometimes you don't even need to come with some proclamations and making some, public, you know, declarations and stuff and all.
Yeah.
You know, when you have not really done, you know, the background work. You can imagine when this government was coming into, what's it called, office and all. You would think that when you are lifting the subsidy on all, on all fronts and all, you would think that you guys have thought about it a lot, you know.
Mm.
And then the removal will just go hand in hand with the implementations of what you guys have planned out and all.
Yeah.
Now, what we are doing more of now is trial and error, you know. So if this one doesn't work, they will come with another proclamation tomorrow,
yeah,
and say this is what we're now doing and all and everything. It doesn't make sense, really. It doesn't make sense. And more so, we are not a production company. I mean, we're not a production nation. We don't produce a lot. And most of the things that we do, or most of the things that we transact with, are imported, you know, which would require dollar purchase and stuff and all, you know. So I even up on to agriculture as well. So it doesn't make sense, really. It does not make sense. And if a layman like me can actually, break this thing down in ABC, like where it is and all, I don't know why these guys that have gone to all the school in the world that have projecting to know how to, bring policies that will bring change and stuff and all and everything. And you guys, the more policy that you bring, the worse that things get and all. I mean, I think it's time for them to sit down and really look at a long-term plan, you know? And whatever you are doing, let it also reflect on how you project yourself, on how you carry yourself. You don't go about the city that people are finding it very difficult to eat 3 square meals. You don't go about with 20 convoy cars and you are saying that, you are cutting costs. It doesn't make sense. So the government that is, telling the public that they need to be prudent and they need to cut costs and they need to do that and all and everything, what are you guys also doing? You know? I mean, people were accusing Governor Sanwo-Olu of going to Grenada to go and have party and stuff and everything and all. People should not be hearing all that, you know, amongst our elected officials. They should be prudent with whatever they are doing. If you don't have to travel, don't travel. You just travel everywhere. You tell us that last I heard he was in China. He was going to see what history has done, what and all and everything. If those things are not needed, they are not really needed, why can't you stay and be prudent with our money? You know? I mean, the government, I don't know if you know, the government has been taxing everybody and everything. Taxable now, yeah, and all. Do you get? And if the people are paying through their nose and they are doing all the things that they are doing and all, that one is not even enough because they see they are still bringing more tax. You know? They have, we saw the Minister of Power telling us that in Cote d'Ivoire, they pay more than us. In this thing, they pay more than us. In this thing, and I'm like, these guys, you guys, the things that you are even saying, do you guys even sit down? I think more of what they try to do now is they try to impress the president, you know, that the same thing with JAMP, you know, they are making a lot of money, that what they made in them, next year will be more than what they made the previous year. And I'm like, are you guys really serious? Is it about policies that uplift the life of the people, or you guys just want to make money, you know, and all? Because people cannot go to school because they can't pay their school fees. You see people dropping out because they can't pay their school fees. Is that what the government is supposed to be doing? You know, so for me, I think to a large extent, going back to the dollar thing, really, how does it, alleviate most of the economic issues that people are going through, or the economic suffering that people are going through and all? If it doesn't do that, like you said, if it doesn't do that, because the money is not liquid, the money has been, put into different assets, because if you put money in bank invest the money,
yeah,
you know, they can buy bonds maybe in, euro bonds or what have you and all and everything, put it so that it can generate, you know, interest and all and everything. So it is not like you're just going to convert the money and the money is just going to be here.
Yeah.
You know, I know there's going to be another process to that. I know. And by the time you start straining all those, what's it called? This thing. People will not be interested in bringing money in because they don't know. It is just imbalance. Everything is just like chaotic and all and everything. So for me, I think the government, they just need to get their acts together. They came in unprepared, came in completely unprepared, you know, and that is the result of what we are getting. I think people are just ambitious for themselves. They are not really looking at the good of the people or the good of what the office that they occupy and all. Yeah, so that's my take on that.
Just to put it out there, I saw that very recently the CBN has put out a statement to say that any insinuation that the CBN is planning to de-dollarize, well, I'm not saying de-dollarize, to sell down on dollars in people's accounts is fake news. It's a lie that the CBN is not going to do that. So they've debunked that claim or that allegation. But I mean, it's not like I see that the first time the CBN has debunked something and then the next
and they
day,
will now do it.
They go ahead and just do the same thing. For me, I think it's going to be a bad idea to do that 100%. Again, even just mulling that kind of idea for me is symptomatic of, again, trying to address the symptom and forgetting the root cause. Going after people's money in their dumb accounts because you say they are buying a dollar and keeping is a symptom of the problem, which is people are scared that their naira is losing value every day, that their net worth is dropping every day, even though their naira savings are going up. So people are naturally going to do what they need to do to preserve their wealth. So
yeah,
they'll go and buy dollar and keep.
If the dollar is going to be stable for them.
Yeah, that's what they'll do.
They'll put the money in the dollar.
Every financial manager will tell you. That's basic common sense. So as a CBN, your job is not to be going to go and witch hunt people that are trying to preserve their own lives and preserve their own
Economic life that you guys, messed up.
No, so
in your own,
what you should be doing is finding the root cause and saying, what can we do to stimulate the economy so that more inflow, FDI can come in, and then we can even maybe increase productivity and earn more foreign exchange. That's what the CBN and the Ministry of Finance should be thinking about, not targeting people's dollars and all that. And that thing that I've seen that they've done, which I kind of like really, is they've also issued a statement where they've cautioned people who are dollarizing the economy. So companies or manufacturers or service providers who are pricing their service in dollars now, you know, that's becoming a new trend.
Yeah.
I wonder the book he will tell in December, just like have a short stay and have a good time on the island. And that was the first time in a very long time I tried to book a hotel, maybe like in the whole year. And I saw something that was strange to me. All the hotels, especially the ones on the island, were pricing their rooms in dollars. No jokes. I'll try and check this hotel and I'll see, $250 per night. I'll check this one, it'll say $300 per night. I'll check this one, it'll say $150 per night. And no jokes. Even when you want to book it, you're going to have to pay in dollars. And I'm like, since when did we get to the point where we are openly charging service fees in dollars?
It's very bad.
Next thing you know, you want to buy real estate. Everybody's trying to price real estate in dollars.
I mean, price land in dollars.
Yeah. And for me, I was worried about that because it was a trend that if the authorities did not nip it in the bud, we were going to get to a point where even the pure tar seller would say, so that I can protect my own earnings and my own revenue, I also price in dollar.
But
once you get to that kind of situation, everybody abandons the naira completely.
I don't know
if it's in dollars.
I don't know if
worse off.
I don't know if you've seen these Beta Edu's workforce. I think it was one of those videos that was trending that time that she was flashing dollars.
Yeah.
On the camera, like, this is what my dad gave me.
Yeah, she used to distribute dollars now, so all that stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, the impunity that our elected officials, you know, have encouraged.
Yeah.
So, when the government officials are doing it, what do you think? I mean, the people are following their leaders now. And
I agree.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about when it comes to the prudence that they are talking about, really. You know, it should start from the people that are, clamoring or asking the public, you know, to kind of be more, you know, temperate with the way they spend and the more temperate with how they go about their finances and all, they should lead by example. They should be the one, you know, not going, what's it called? The first thing that they did for themselves was, what's it called? Order for $150,000 Jeep or $200,000 Jeep for themselves. And they are the same people that are telling us, no, we have to, we know that we are in trying times. We need to cut down, on everything. You guys are not doing, how much is that? Like, by 100 million or 200 million naira?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, you people are not doing what you are preaching. You are not practicing what you are preaching. So,
yeah.
I mean, they should just leave us alone and just go and stay one place.
Yeah. And for me, I think for someone who's asking, okay, what's the way out? What can the government do right now that will actually improve our situation, especially where the dollar is concerned? I think that number one, we have a production problem. Today, our only source of foreign exchange earnings is oil. And even with that oil, we have been having issues with maintaining production. So we can't improve on our production of oil to make more revenue. So on that side, increasing income or earning potential for dollar is limited. The only other side or the other leg that we can work on right now is how we spend the dollars that we get. And that's where our government needs to be very transparent and honest about how they are doing it. The little dollars that we are making, what are we doing about it? Every day we hear news that some governor or some minister misappropriates $5 billion, $6 billion, $10 billion. These are monies that if the CBN had done the right thing in supervising how those monies are being moved around, such that once you see something suspicious, you flag it, you prosecute it, you make sure that you nip it in the bud. That money goes into the proper channels, disbursed to actual people that need it. Today, we have politicians that are stockpiling billions of dollars in their houses, and then we're here complaining of scarcity of dollars. If we can even find a way to mop up all these excess dollars being hoarded away by the real thieves, and we redistribute it to the manufacturing sector and to the other sectors that need it for production purposes, at least we'll be able to make better use of the dollar to increase our productivity. For me, that's where we need to look at. If we cannot increase our FDI and we cannot increase our earning capacity, let us utilize the little dollars we're getting more optimally and effectively so that we can help to stabilize the currency, stabilize the naira. Until our government gets to that point where you see them actually monitoring the use of our dollar, the CBN, how are they administering FX? How are they spreading it across to people that actually need it? Until they do all of that, we're not going anywhere. All of these proclamations the CBN is doing, instructing banks to do this, instructing banks to do that, all of that is performative. I don't see it working out. I don't see it having an effect. That's my own 2 cents. So I think for things to be better, we need to look out to our government and see how they are treating, like what you've said, Resh, how are the politicians themselves conducting themselves? How are they spending dollars? Better, like you said, every Friday should carry hard currency and be sharing among our staff, doing giveaway. All these are things that shows that our leaders are actually part of the problem. They are siphoning our currency.
Taxpayers.
They are
money.
Using it. They are stockpiling it. They are spending it as they like.
And
meanwhile,
solidarity
there are companies, there are manufacturing companies there that are struggling to stay alive because they want to open from M to import raw material. They've not gotten FX for almost 2 months. You know, so all of these misplaced priorities for me is where the biggest challenge is and we have to fix.
They are doing solidarity for her that she should be brought back to office. She should be installed back to office.
And because she's a chef giver.
Yeah, because she's a chef giver.
Mind you, did you hear the news that the EFCC have recovered the 30 billion, about 30 billion naira loot from the former Minister of Humanitarian Affairs during Buhari's time?
Yeah, but did you also hear the news that Emefiele has been granted bail?
Okay. That's good now.
It's good.
I mean, he's been in custody for how long? Like almost 5 months. Okay. I mean, he's been granted bail, but it doesn't mean that the prosecution on his case will stop now.
Not so.
He still has to answer for his crimes.
You, what's it called? You know the way it is now. in the next 1 year or 2 years now, you see Emefiele.
He will run for governor.
You see posters.
No standard.
So my
only concern or question is around the 30 billion that the EFCC claimed they've recovered from the humanitarian minister. So what are you going to do with that money? Is that because that was Buhari's tenure, right? So now it's Tinubu's tenure. Are they going to re-loot it? Or is that money going to actually go into actual projects?
I just feel things like, that will I just impact feel our like lives. We're not serious yet. We're not serious yet. And I don't know, really, because, I mean, yeah, like you said, maybe we have not gotten to that level yet, or maybe we'll never even get to that level where we'll begin to demand accountability from, I mean, these guys that we put in office and all. And then we'll not just wait for another election cycle where they will tell you that it is that Igbo man that is doing you know, and you have to fight for your rights so that they don't take your right from you, or it is that Yoruba man that is doing your village priest, you know, and all. You have to fight for your right, da da da, and all, everything. And then stupid Nigerians, guess what? They will go out.
Yeah.
They will start saying, what's it called? Yeah. I mean, it's just what it is what it is, you know. But we cannot keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. We just have to live. We have to live by example, really. You know.
Yeah, we have to live by example.
That's just my take on
your
that.
Take. Really. All right, we need to go on a short break and to pay the bills. However, when we come back, we're going to be discussing a very interesting topic. Femi Lazarus, one of the most trending pastors on social media, the new heartthrob of the new generation. It seems like he has entered the hornet's nest with one of his new hot takes. It's causing a lot of controversy. We'll get around it when we come back. Don't
but
go
I like. I like Lazarus' take anyway.
Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, we'll chop on it when we come back.
We'll come back.
Hi there, beautiful people. It is your host, LA, and I do hope you're enjoying this episode. We would love to feel your pulse as we discuss trending topics. Connect with us on Twitter at FUNTAQA. That is Funtaka. We're also on Facebook, and that is FUNTAQA, Funtaka. Leave us a comment, give a like, follow us. We are dying to hear from you. Now, let's get back to the concluding part of this episode. Ciao! And we are back. For sticking with us, this is the Funtaka Junction Real Talk podcast, where we talk about everything about anything. And if you enjoy what you're listening to and you haven't subscribed or followed us, what are you waiting for? Click on the follow button and the subscribe button. We stream across multiple platforms: Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. I mean, we're everywhere. We're global. And we like to bring all the trending gist right to your earbuds. So click on the follow button so you can get notifications every time we drop a new episode. And we do like to drop them every week to keep you updated. Right, back to the matter.
Yeah.
Femi Lazarus. I mean, I think it's been a while since we, not since the time of probably Pastor Emmanuel Iren, did we see a relatively young upstart pastor tends to say all
is
the
he
right
an
things.
Upstart? He's been.
I mean, when I say upstart, I mean.
Yeah, well, not like
they've been there for a while. Yeah, none of these there. Guys are newbies. Like they've been there for like a few 10 years. There, yeah. Right? Yeah. But relatively upstart in the sense that, you know, their ministry is just coming to light.
In comparison to what we've had.
I like Femi Lazarus. I think he brings a fresh perspective to how, you know, we interact with spiritual principles, you know, doctrines and all that. And and again, it tends to say all the things that, you know, people like to hear. However, I recall someone on Twitter saying, and I think I like his media team too, because they have a way of editing and
making those punchy sound bites that they push onto the social media, and it tends to catch, you know, attention really, really well.
Yeah.
And I recall someone saying that, you know, this guy that all of us seems to love right now, a time is coming when he's going to say something, and we that were loving him now will come for him, and then we'll want to swallow him whole. And I was thinking, will this guy ever really fall for that? I feel like this guy has a very balanced view of things, and I don't see him saying anything that's going to be controversial. Well, maybe I said that too early. Because just something recently, a video surfaced online where, and Femi Lazarus, by the way, is the lead pastor of the Sphere of Light Church. That's the name of the ministry, Sphere of Light. A video clip surfaced on social media where he seemed to be speaking in defense of the church as an important, you know, ministry in today's society, you know, and he seemed to be defending, you know, the usefulness and the impact of church. I remember him saying something like, if the church doesn't exist in Nigeria, that there will be trouble, right? And he was talking about how the church was influential in stopping, you know, in times past, stopping some very, you know, bad practices such as the slave trade and then, you know, the killing of twins, all of those things that we used to do back in the days that today we consider as barbaric. You know, the church was important in coming in and stopping those things, you know, bringing education to the people and all that. And, you know, for him, these were the points he was giving as to why the church, you know, is so important to the society. And then everyone who seems to be speaking negative about the church, it's not because they actually love the people or love you. It's just because they just want to say something negative about the church. And when that clip went online, when I saw it, I felt like, well, he has some points. Some of the things I said, I looked at it and I said, this could actually have a different reaction or invoke a different reaction from people, depending on how you look at it. And I was right. Because then Sheon Kuti came forward and had like a rebuttal to Femi Lazarus' take on Christianity. And he appeared to be very, very livid. You know, in fact, the major bone of contention...
He's always livid.
Well, true.
That's where he went to slap police. God saved him that he didn't slap police in the middle of the night.
It's like the guy has anger issues, I'm telling you. Yeah, he's angry. One of his major bone of contention was the fact that Lazarus claimed that Christianity was responsible for stopping slave trade. And according to him, he released a very long video, a 30-minute clip, where he was backing up with evidence to say that Christianity and the British actually use Christianity as a guise to enforce slavery on the people, right? And he talked about the deposition of the kings back then by the whites, and essentially using Christianity to install new kings who were essentially stooges or puppets of the Brits to achieve their own ultimate aim. And he said all the education and things that Lazarus was claiming that the Christians brought, that the whites and the Britons actually did all that for their own benefit, not because they cared about the people, you know. And he was really upset that, you know, Lazarus was twisting historical facts to suit the narrative that wasn't true. Like I said, this can have two different divides to this conversation, and both of them, or two perspectives, will have altars of truth and facts series, right? But from where you sit, you know, we just observing as observers, do you think that there was anything that Lazarus said that was wrong? Or, you know, is there anything about our history, you know, based on what you know, that you can say, nope, the pastor has twisted one or two facts here, based on the fallacy that's been pushed from time about the Catholic and the missionaries and what they did when they came into Nigeria all those years ago?
Well, for me, like you said, there is tendencies to be like a bit of truth or some truth in what both side is saying, really. And I think for the for the colonial guys, I mean, the question is, what would you expect, especially if there is political undertone, you know, to the missionaries, you know, coming down and stuff. You know, I think we've talked about this going back to our tradition stuff, we've talked about it on set before, really. And for me, I like to go with the eye test. I always say it's like, there is a difference between when history is being told to you, and there's a difference with the experience, you know, that has been documented, you know, from that, you know, practice, or maybe a fire worship and what have you and all.
Yeah.
You know. And if we had traditional worship, if we had all those stuff, I mean, before the British or before the colonial guys came, how were we practicing that? What were we doing, you know, that alleviates the people's plight, the people's livelihood and stuff? No, you know. And I think if we can definitely, answer that question, then we'll be able to, maybe debunk whatever has been said or what has not been said and stuff, no, everything. But if we cannot answer that question accurately, you know, without bias or what have you, and we are just spouting, oh, you know, they are the one that came to influence us, they're the one that came to do this and came to do that, you know, I mean, we're just arguing for arguing's sake, really, you know. So for me, it doesn't, I don't really care much about siding with anybody. Maybe this one is the one that won the argument, or this one not the one that. What is the truth in between all the things that has been said? You know,
yeah.
I think that's what we need to concentrate on, really. You know, and for me, the immolation is immolization of, you know, the slaves when the Obas die. You know, they have to bury the musical slaves, Obakus. That's what we call it in the Yoruba culture. Nabobakus and all. What does that? Does that dignify humans, you know, as having the same right to life, you know, and all? You get
killing of twins.
Yeah. So the killing of twins too was there. You know, they said it was Mary Slessor, and somebody says it wasn't Mary Slessor. It was, hey, you're honest, you know, from the ethic and what have you and all. I mean, there's a lot of stories and all, you know. But the Eyoenost Ekpe, that one was a bit, there was a bit of, you know, history behind it, and it was kind of like, you know, so you could say, okay, he was the one that actually stood against that. But Eyo too was selling slaves. He was selling slaves before, he was selling slaves before he became Odi Oba, you know, because his father died and his brother died that took over. That's when he became king as well and all. But before then, he was selling
king
slaves.
Of where, Benin or where?
No, he was in the Calabar area. I mean, the river, you know, and all. Yeah, so I mean, there is a whole lot of stuff, you know, that is surrounding it, really, you know. I mean, but I would say that the Christians, when they brought the missionaries and stuff, kind of put things in a bit of perspective, really, which gives, I mean, humans, you know, dignity, life, you know, everybody. If it is the gospel of Jesus Christ, really, you know, I mean, what did he preach? Forget all those ones that are showing, saying that Jesus had babies and what have you. That's his cup of tea. I don't know. The guy is even reading too much. Sometimes he's reading too much. And
books.
All these things that is, what's it called, that is kind of, you know, categorically saying that and all. It's in books. They put it in books, you know, and all. Mm. And if, what's it called, if history is going to be manipulated, you read it in books as well. You know,
true.
They will tell the side of the story that they want you to hear, you know, and all. So we can all definitely say, definitively say, like, this is the thing, these are the facts, and these are the whatnot and all and everything, you know. And so for me, like I said, I won't I can be a bit biased because I'm a practicing Christian, really. You know, and I would say it that the reason why I'm a practicing Christian is because, having studied what the Bible preaches, which is like, you have to live your life for your brother. That was the gospel that Jesus Christ did, you know, and all. And if we are talking about stories, what we read, you know, not what is being told to us, what we have read over the years that has stayed over time, was that Jesus Christ lived his life as sacrifice, you know, for man's redemption, for the sin of man and stuff and all. And up until Cheung brought his book that he read that Jesus Christ had a baby or what have you. No, me, I never hear that one.
You know, people have always said that Jesus was married and he had a child.
Yeah, well,
I've always heard that. Yeah,
well, you know, but even if he married,
the movie. Sorry, I think is it the Da Vinci Code? Yeah, the one that Tom Hanks starred in.
Da Vinci.
Yeah, that was the story.
Yeah,
that Jesus had a descendant, a female descendant.
Yeah,
and they were trying to trace all of that, and then the church were trying to. That someone found out that. I was trying to bring it to light, and the church realized that someone found out that and was trying to stop, you know, that news from spreading out that Jesus Christ actually had a child and a baby and all that. So that was the story of the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, movie. Was written by somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, even if that was said, let's assume that that was said.
Yeah.
Did they say Jesus Christ killed anybody for his own? Yeah, what's it called?
Yeah, but that would negate the ultimate story of Jesus Christ being the pristine one that did not defile himself by having carnal knowledge with any woman and, you know, preserving himself holy for his ministry.
Like I said, that's fine, really. But if we're going to look at it that way, but what was his life, you know, practice? Was there anything that they said he did outside of maybe God? I'm saying like, let's assume
it was
that
true.
that was mm-hmm. the case. Was there anything that he did, you know, except of course if you're going to write the book again, I can write another book.
You mean the Bible?
So, yeah, no. Okay. They can write another book, you know, one of those ones that Cheung has read now. They can write another book saying that he actually killed some people, you know, for supremacy and stuff and all, you know. So for me, I think the gospel that Jesus Christ brought, let's just go back, cut to the chase, go back to what we're saying. The gospel that Jesus Christ brought was the gospel of sacrifice, you know, redemption, you know, living for your life for your fellow, you know, I mean, human, you know, brother, you know, and all and everything. And that was it, really, you know. So if you are now talking about, okay, they brought Christianity, they were the one that freed slaves or what have you and all, it was a mutual fight. Some of the whites who were fighting for the freedom of the slaves, they were saying like, that's barbaric, it's not right and all and everything, mm-hmm. you know. As a matter of fact, they said at some point, Africans still wanted to sell slaves.
Yeah.
You know, it was the white that was saying like, we're not buying again, we have discovered another form of slavery, which is that we've seen raw materials, we are going industrial, we want to further, you know, the growth of our economy and all the rest of them and all and everything. Mm. So we're going to install, you know, a government, you know, that would dance to our tunes, you know, that would kind of like, you know, and all. Sure, you get. So that they were not interested in slavery again.
They were just interested
in trading and stuff and all and everything. Yeah. So buying copper and all, buying all those natural resources that we had material. And all and everything. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So for me, it's a two-way street, really. It's a two-way street, you know, and I would say that, there's a bit of truth in what Femi Lazarus was saying, and there's a bit of truth in what Cheung was saying, mm-hmm. but he should just reduce his anger. He's always angry. I don't know what thing they do. He's always angry.
For me, right? Yeah. And I agree with you. I align with you perfectly on that, which is that two sides have levels of truth. But one thing that jumped at me was a statement that Femi Lazarus said, and I'm trying not to be guilty of nitpicking, but it struck me, you know. He said that if the church doesn't exist today, that there will be trouble. In other words, what he's trying to say is that the church today is playing a role where we are creating, where it's creating some kind of balance.
Yeah, some kind of people, temperance.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Enabling people to be, you know, enabling society to be balanced and, like you said, to be temperate. And I thought to myself, was he referring to the church of back in the day?
The church of back in the day.
And the impact that the missionaries had in helping to provide some form of stability and reasonableness in how we do things, which is stopping barbaric acts like, you know, the old Abubakar incident, killing of twins, all those funny things we should do. Is that what he's talking about? Or is he talking about the church of today?
because I keep asking myself the question that the way we do, and I understand everything he was saying there was trying to defend the church,
yeah,
and defend the impact that the church has on society. But I ask myself, the church of today and how we do church today in Nigerian society, are they really having any impact in terms of how people, let me say church people now, conduct themselves when they leave the hallowed chamber of the four walls of the hallowed chamber, and they come into the society where they interact with people who are believers, non-believers, traditional worshippers, whatever? Do we see their light really shine? Right? Do we? If I go into the bus, for example, if I go into the street now, enter a bus, going to work, or I take a train, or I go to a restaurant to eat, if I interact with someone who's a Christian, can I see something about them that makes me feel like, okay, this one is
something
a Christian.
Something I want to embrace.
Yeah, this one's
stuff.
A Christian based on how he's doing. Maybe there's a way he handled a certain incident that made me feel like, this guy is different from other people and I want to emulate him. Do I see Christianity have that impact in today's society? And I'm being honest, the answer for me is no. I don't really see. I see a lot of people going to church because they think that if they dance and worship, they will be able to invoke the anointing of God in their own life so that the blessings will come on them. I see a lot of that. I see a lot of going to church to pay your tithe so that you believe that you'll get a promotion that will increase your bank account. I see a lot of that, right? I see a lot of going for night vigils because you believe that in that night vigil, God is going to move his hand and break that curse in your family so that you guys can see road. I see a lot of that. But in terms of him saying, if there was no church today, society would be in trouble, I'm asking myself, I'm not really seeing that communal impact of church and church people when they enter into the world and they interact with the world. And I don't know if that's me being biased or being too critical, but what do you think?
No, I think you're, I mean, if you talk about impact, I would say that the impact that the church is having today is as a result of our forebears, the sacrifices that they've made, maybe the Ayoba Balolas and the rest of them and all, you know, and not the gospel of tithe and the give it all and give it all to God so that and God can bless you and all those and the first fruits and all that, yeah. You know. And I think one of the things that pastors, you know, or pastors of, I mean, this dispensation, what they can do to kind of really, remove themselves from that stain, you know, that people are seeing associated with the so-called new generation churches and stuff and all, is that if they are going to speak, truths, you know, I mean, about what has happened and what the missionaries have brought and stuff and all and everything, they should also be able to speak truth to what is kind of tainting the image of the church of today. They should be bold enough to speak the truth and say, this is what is happening and this is what we need to go away from and stuff, you know, and all. Yeah, so for me, I think to a large extent, the church should be like a template that people see and want to embrace and say, this is one. I mean, you know what the missionaries did? You know, missionaries, they would take themselves, leave their countries and go to another country.
Yeah.
Live almost like paupers and die there.
Yeah.
You know,
live their entire life.
Live their entire life. You know, that is what they do. I know of a missionary, old man that's a missionary that died. I think he was somewhere around Mexico, you know, and that's what they do. That's the life that they live, you know. I mean, those are the people that you would probably want to sponsor and say, okay, take some money and go, you know, and do live the life that you want to live and all. Not luxury pastors.
Yeah.
Not luxury pastors that will be riding private jets, on the dime of the pauper in church and all. You know, it doesn't make sense. So for me, I think what you are saying is very valid, and it's a question that the pastor should be willing to answer. You know, if you are going to come out boldly and say you want to defend your faith, no, then you should be able to defend it wholeheartedly, defend it on all fronts and all. But that is not to also diminish that there are some pastors that are actually living and trying, you know, to live that model, you know, and all. That's the reason why I'm going to mention Pastor Sam Adeyemi. I like his leadership style, you know, and I like his his willingness to kind of just give away leadership to church members, you know, and just, I mean, at some point he was in the US for a long time,
yeah,
maybe like 3 or 4 years or so, and all, and it was, the church was functioning and people were, I mean, living their life and all and everything, you know, and now I think he's even moving to more of leadership roles, yeah, that is teaching government functionals, I mean, organizations, yeah, and stuff and everything and all. Now I think for me, his model, his type of lifestyle, you know, I think to a large extent, I mean, I don't know about, because I've never heard him talk about tithing or whatever.
No, I agree with you 100%. When Pastor Sam was still based in Nigeria, I used to attend Daystar regularly.
Yeah,
and for me, I was thoroughly impressed with how he did church.
Mm.
He was not someone who believed in, oh, let me just multiply different branches. Let me have a branch here, open in UK, open in Canada. You know, let's spread tentacles like as if it's a business. And then, you know, he was more interested in imparting his people, no matter how small, no matter how large, with the right values and the right perspectives to what they were meant to be in a Christian. Not just for you, but for others, right? Preaching his message across the major anchor of Christianity, which is the two commandments. Love your God, right? Mm. Above everyone else. And then love your neighbor as yourself. Mm. That was what his ministry was centered around. And you can see it in terms of how, I think Daystar is probably one of the only few churches where when you go into Daystar, the people are not trying to form spiritual.
Mm.
They actually have a very communal way to doing things, right? Right from how they interact with you.
Yeah.
And when they go outside, you can spot a Daystar member from the way he does things. Number one, very temperate people. Their life is not hard. Live and let live. They like community things. So you see them always trying to gather people together, share the word, share ideas. That stems from Pastor Sam's ideology of what Christianity should be. I was very impressed with that. And like you rightly said too, he doesn't have that complex of geo complex, where everybody needs to defer to me, I'm buying their head to me. No, he believes in, I have team members, fellow associate pastors, who also are called by God.
Capable.
Yeah, they're anointed. Let them also pour into the people.
Yeah.
And let the people pour into them. So he's very okay with empowering his people to also be able to lead and teach. All this while he's been outside the country. Whenever he's not doing a telebroadcast for service, he's allowing his deputies and his guys to also, you know, take over sermons and everything. So I'm impressed. I've liked his model for the longest time. And the leadership thing he's doing too is also great.
Yeah. And I think that if anybody wants to, if you're a pastor, you want to learn how to lead your church, maybe you should go and learn under Pastor Sam Adeyemi.
100.
Don't be, what's it called?
100.
Don't be too, you don't let your ego kill you. Go and learn.
I was saying this thing last week that everybody wakes up one morning and God has called them.
Yeah,
and they can open church.
Yeah,
I've said for the longest time that being a pastor is not just about knowing how to read Bible and regurgitate scripture. There are certain things you need to learn, and I'm all for people taking time to actually learn under you know, institutions, under people who have become institutions.
Yeah,
so that you know what it means to be a shepherd and to be a leader. You know, so I'm just agreeing what you're saying.
Exactly.
Like, maybe you should take some time and study Pastor Sam, learn under him, let him tutor you for a few years. I'm not saying 1 or 2 years, like 10 years.
A few years.
Maybe 5 or 10 years, you know, be groomed
and
understand what it means to be a shepherd. So that when you come out, Pastor Emmanuel Iren, like I was talking about, was also someone who came out of the flock of Pastor Sam Adeyemi.
Yeah.
And I listened to him.
The guy is a chill guy. Very
sound.
Young guy. Very chilled and all. Yes. I think he's into film.
You
too
can
now.
Tell
film,
that this guy got the substance of what he meant.
Yeah.
Pastor.
Yeah. So, I mean, now spontaneously doing now is we are giving you pointers that if you want pastors, if you want a young pastor that you want to learn from, go to Iren. Iren has Sam Adeyemi as his pastor.
Yeah.
So go to Iren and learn. If you are one of those ones that are older than Iren, you feel Iren is too small for you, go under Sam Adeyemi and go and learn, you know, how to lead, you know, and all. So nobody is saying, because some people will probably say, those guys at the junction, they are just after pastors. Nobody's after any pastor. We're just saying that this what's it called, this life that these guys are preaching, they should live by example, you know, and not be fleecing the church members and making them, you hear, even hear stuff like some pastor will say, they are the one that is called, you know, they are the one that is called.
Did you hear about one pastor that said that people who do work in church and are expecting to be paid, that they can never be blessed?
Yeah, what is
it? David Ibiome. He said, you're a drummer in church, you're asking them to pay his salary for being a drummer in church, that you can never be blessed as long as you're collecting money. I said, what is all this nonsense? Like, can you imagine? Yeah. You want somebody to come and give you skill and time, and you don't want to even be able to appreciate, but you as a pastor, you want the church to be able to pay you.
But you know
because
that
you are the only one that's the vessel of honor.
But you know that was actually where tithing came from.
Yeah.
When we're talking about the Levites.
Yeah.
Because the they were not working.
Yeah.
And told to the Israelites, not even everybody.
Yeah.
It was told to Israelites that you guys put something together,
yeah,
and give to these guys because they are the one that is laboring, they are the one that is that, yeah, and all and everything. So at the end of the day, really, I think it is more of people that are not reading their Bible. They are the ones that are falling prey to all these
things.
What's it called? Yeah. There is, and I'm going to say categorically, there is no pastor on this earth that is more anointed than you. If you have received Christ, if you have received Christ, you know, and all, you can see that even the pastors, with all their mistakes, they are not condemning themselves. They are not even saying, I don't belong to Christ again and all. That is actually the way our life is, you know. We fall, we rise, we fall, we rise, we fall, we rise. But that is the progression. The thing with this is that you are not doing stuff deliberately, you know, because we are humans. We always have tendencies to kind of like, you know, slip up here and there and all and everything, you know. But the focus should be like, you want to keep getting better. You want to keep getting better. Pastor, Sam Adeyemi was even saying stuff, you know, and I think that's part of the reason why I like him and all, because he's somebody that kind of accepts that he's maybe...
He makes mistakes, and
last one of the things that I shared, because I always share his nuggets, and one of the things that I shared, you know, last, you know, from somebody, we were talking about as a leader, as a pastor, you know, you should accept your vulnerability. You accept that there are some things that you are actually struggling with or you cannot do, and your church member should be able to know that this is my fault, this is what I cannot, you know, da da da, and unless somebody that is in your church member can actually help you in that area and all and everything. Yeah. So, the gospel of the Bible says we are joint heirs with Christ, you know, seated in heavenly places. We are co-heirs with Christ, you know. So nobody, if any pastor comes and say they have more anointing than you, it's a big fat lie. They probably have read the Bible well and they can interpret it very well. That is fine. That is years of study and years of... Anybody can do that. Anybody can... What's it called? And all. So for me, I think one of the things that I just want to say is that no pastor is more anointed than you. If you accept Christ, you are as anointed.
Yeah.
You know, you're as anointed, you know, and all, and you can actually live your life, you know, like you want to live it. I'll say one last thing regarding Femi Lazarus. You know, he was talking one day, and I was talking about... I'm still talking about this... being able to kind of like know that maybe I don't get everything, you know. There's some things that he was talking about, how there was a time in Nigeria where, you know, we were experiencing less plane crashes, you know, that it was some Christian that was praying, you know, that was praying that, you know, that I mean that was I mean
that was stop the plane crashes.
That was what stopped the plane crashes and all that and all. I was like, I'm not agree for that one, because, you know, we said it, 45,000 flights in a day. That's what goes on in the US in a day. 45,000 flights every day. You hardly hear plane crashes. You know, maybe it happens though. I'm not saying it doesn't happen though.
Mm-hmm.
But you had the maybe like negligence and stuff and everything, and they will still fix it and all and everything. You know, I was watching one plane crash documentary that I had. What's it called? They were showing in one of these Discovery channels and all. If you see the way they were documenting, you know, what could have happened. Maybe the cabin crew didn't do this, the cabin crew didn't do that and all. In details, you know, how the aerodynamics worked and how everything was, they were detailing everything, like, you know, and all and everything, you know. And for me, that's where our religiosity comes into it.
You know,
where we think that I mean, I'm not saying that prayer is effective. I'm not saying that people should not pray or what have you and all. But there are some things that we have been given the responsibility to do, which is taking care of ourselves on this plane, on this earth, you know, and all. And if we don't do that, Japan is one of the least religious nations in the world. They are one of the most technologically advanced in the world and all. Everything is working, you know. And so if you think that you are going to pray your way into technology, now lie you. You have to go to, I mean, school and get your hands dirty and get your brain working, yeah, and all and everything. That
brain
is what will make your plane to stay in the air and not fall. You know, guess what? Yesterday, somebody was, what's it called? I think, it was yesterday. I was watching something. Well, I think this guy too posted it. Rufai. Rufai that's always talking everything bad about Nigeria. Posted it. Guess what? They take flights from the airport. Light, international airport. They don't get light. People are using their phones.
Airport,
yeah, right? Nigerian airport. People are using their phones at the airport. No lights.
Crazy.
And whilst we are talking about praying, is that what is that what we're going to be praying about? China, that one God will come to solve for us.
Yeah,
you know. So for me, I just thought to say that even Pastor Sam, Pastor Fair Lazarus, me. Too into
You know, the problem with these guys is that they get so deep into the spiritual thing that they don't know how to differentiate the dichotomy between things that you should be using prayer for and things that, you know, you should be expecting us based on what the brain that God gave us
exactly
to achieve. Not everything is prayer bound.
Exactly.
There are some things in this life you achieve it by just following principles.
Exactly.
And we should be able to teach our people that there's a clear difference. Do you understand? Yeah, there's always a miraculous where the mighty hand of God comes in and wrought something that's beyond the ordinary.
The miraculous. The miraculous happens when you have taken yourself to the precipice
where you are no longer, there's nothing you can do again.
That is what is called miracle.
Yes.
You know, Moses walked to the River Jordan.
Yeah.
I mean, to the Red Sea.
Yeah.
He walked there, and it was instruction that he walked there.
Yeah.
You know, and God told him, what do you have? What hell do you have in your hand? He said, I have a stick. And God told him, where you point that stick? That is useful for, you know, you also doing your own part. You know, point that stick. And he pointed the stick, and the what's it called? That's what miracle means. You don't sit back in your...
And
expect
that you would just fly to the Red Sea and the Red Sea would just open and you fly through. I agree with you 100%. And for me, that's where, you know, we need to make that clear difference in how our churches are teaching our people, you know. This whole idea of miracle alert, miracle money, you stay in your house and then you get miracle alert. A lot of churches do that.
Put your bank app on your phone.
They are pushing the idea that, come and give a testimony of how you got a job you didn't qualify for.
Exactly.
The other qualified people, I was the least qualified, I got the job. And then we are trying to push that idea that you don't have to do anything. You know, just rely on the supernatural power of God to just take you from 0 to 100 by just believing and having faith. It's a lazy Christianity we're teaching our people, and it's not helping. And we can see it clearly in society that we are not as advanced as we should be because we are substituting things that we should be teaching our people to work for.
Yeah.
We are substituting that for saying, if you just have faith, God will do it for you. It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't really work.
And on the topic of pastors, just as you round up, one other major famous pastor who was also becoming quite popular on social media sometime last year pre-election. In fact, this pastor was very popular because of his election prophecies. Pastor Faye Daniels. Remember, there was one in the midst of prophetic pastors that were giving election predictions. There was one particular one whose prediction was so detailed and so, you know, point to point that it caught the attention of everyone, even including the APC government. And people say, who is this young man who is giving accurate prophecies like this? And funny enough, his prophecy was checking the boxes. You know, if he said 10 things, like 5 or 6 things had come to pass at that point in time. And everybody was like, no. This guy is the real deal. Only for us to hear that he was arrested a few days of the election on suspicion of rape allegations. Apparently, some church members had lodged complaints that the pastor had sexually assaulted them and molested them at some point in time. And then that was just how they took him out of the scene. You know, at the time when it was beginning to gain prominence and all that, Pastor Faye Daniels was locked up in detention while a live case of rape was opened up against him. We've just heard that just a week ago, that case has finally been heard and concluded. He has now been sentenced to life imprisonment on account of rape accusations and sexual molestation. I think that's really sad. But one thing that jumped at me very, very easily was how quick this case was heard, you know. And I read the judgment that the judge made in making that pronouncement and ruling. The judge said he believes the story that he has been told by the, what they call those people that bring the case to court? Are they the plaintiff? The plaintiffs. Now? Yeah. He believes the story that has been told to him. And based on the fact that I believe his story, he has convicted Faye Daniels of the crime. Now, I was asking myself, with the rape cases that I know, is usually a case of you giving evidence. It's usually a case of you giving substantial evidence to back up the case before you convict. Beyond reasonable doubt. This one that the judge is saying, his conviction is based on just the fact that he believes the story. It's a little, you know, maybe a little interesting.
Maybe they should check the judge's back pocket. Maybe a PC ticket. But what do you think? Like, what do you think about that judgment? I mean, what he has done, if he actually that's the case, is bad, extremely bad.
Yeah.
You know, but life imprisonment, I don't know.
Yeah, I heard that's also a very rare one. To give life imprisonment for, you know, rape cases, I think it's usually about maybe 15 years, thereabouts, at the most. Sentencing him to life imprisonment is also a new thing. Apart from the fact that he has been convicted out of very, very weird evidential basis. You've now given him life imprisonment. Looks more like a witch hunt to me, if you ask.
Yeah, I mean...
And how quickly this case was heard. I mean, mind you, the case of Princess and that other guy, that you just remember actors... That one is still being dragged.
Still pending,
yeah, even with video evidence. There was video evidence for that, you know, that to show the guy was actually, you know, playing, touching the young girl and all those things. And that one is still being dragged out. And then this one that is not even... It's just hearsay. He said, I said, in 1 year... The judge believes his story and has convicted him to life imprisonment.
Yeah, I mean,
really, really interesting.
I mean, like I said, it's the eye test now. It's what we can see with our eyes, you know,
yeah.
That is kind of like, let's say something shady about
that case. Yeah, it's a little,
something shady about the case.
Of course, no smoke without fire. And that's the thing we also talk about, right? Are these cases completely untrue? All these allegations completely untrue, I can't say. Right? I think it's very difficult for people to frame you of, especially when it's becoming, from what I heard, about three cases, right? One was actual rape. The other lady said he molested her sexually. The third one said it was attempted rape. So it was multiple accusations, not just one. So the question is there a case where there's actual truth in the allegations, where the pastor may have actually...
But you know, if you are going to put someone behind bars for the rest of their lives,
yeah,
I think it should be incontrovertible, if there's any English like that.
Yeah.
Truth that has been established based on the gigantic, enormous evidence that... is at the disposal of the what's it called?
I agree.
Of the people that are prosecuting and all and everything. Do you get? So, I mean, and that's what we say about our jungle justice that we do here. Emefiele has actually killed a lot of people with the policies that he implemented in Nigeria. Like, people literally died. We saw people dying on the road to their workplaces and all. Emefiele has been granted bail. And that's the thing that people see. When people see it, they will see the slanted justice system. They will see that this, justice is only applicable to the poor.
Yeah.
The people that are actually what's it called, messing up and controlling our affairs. The
major criminals.
They are not. Was James Ibori was welcomed. He was welcomed like was as if Jesus Christ is entering Jerusalem. That was how he was welcomed back to what's it called, Niger Delta, when after he had done time in what's it called, in the UK and all. That's what we do now, you know. So for me, I don't know. I just feel like it's unfortunate for him that he has life imprisonment, and he's still a young man. It's not like he's old like that.
Yeah,
you know, life imprisonment.
Yeah, he's still a relatively young man. And the question for me is that I know they give life imprisonment, but hope there will be chance for him to get early release.
No, he's going to give. Kind of he's going to go for appeal now. He should appeal.
Okay, so they can lighten the sentence for him.
Yeah, he should appeal the case, and yeah. But don't go raping anybody, because you don't know the judge that will be in front of you. Maybe the judge that likes APC. you could just go life imprisonment.
Yeah. And I think that's the whole conversation for another day. How our pastors need to learn discipline to avoid situations where they find themselves in compromising situations with female members. And you know, the thing is, because I've sort of had a taste of what it meant to be a spiritual leader in the past.
A spiritual leader?
Yeah. When I was in campus as a student.
Ah, you were once a pastor?
I was a pastor, yes, now.
Oh, right.
100.
Ah.
You think I was like talking about...
Pastor what's it called?
Pastor what?
Yeah, Pastor Eli. Pastor Eli.
Let's go in Pastor Eli before.
So you're Pastor Eli from going forward. You're Pastor Eli.
I had to deliberately stop people from calling me
Pastor. You are Pastor Eli going forward.
No.
You are Pastor Eli.
Well, I won't answer you. If you call me, that, I won't answer you. My point is, for someone who has been that person before, I kind of understand, you know, you see total deference, right? Yeah. People completely defer to you. Boy, girl, doesn't matter. Older than you, younger than you. They just see as that symbol of authority.
So what did you now do with your pastor title now?
What I do with it?
That people are supposed to be giving you tithes. That people are supposed to like be kind of like...
So here's the thing. I got to a point where I asked myself certain questions. And I had to be very real with myself. Yes, I had certain qualities that could make me pass as a pastor. I could preach very well, right? And I had a few gifts, right? Spiritual gifts too. Like I could see. I was a seer, right? Anointed guy. I also had some baggages, right, that made me understand that maybe you're not particularly suited for this as at now, right? I was someone who used to attract a lot of female attention. And at that time in school, as a young guy, I had a tendency to also like the attention of women. And I asked myself a thing. I said, as a spiritual guy, who, as a leader or a pastor, who has women who are coming to work for you? They have no problem coming to your hotel, to your hostel, to your room, trying to wash your clothes, lay your bed, carry your Bible.
So they will carry your Bible.
So I understand. I expressed it firsthand. And I asked myself, and I said, bros. Yes,
I've said, going forward, your pastor.
Relax now. I said, bros, this thing is a dangerous thing because this is temptation. It didn't take me anything to tell a female member to come to my room at 8, 9 p.m. And they will come thinking, oh, Pastor Larry needs to do something for him. And then they're right there. I can do anything I want to them. And I said, you know what? Let me take a step back. This pastor thing is good. I can preach. I can, yeah. But based on my own weaknesses, this is a setup. So it's better for me to not be the reason why somebody else's spiritual journey is truncated because I molested them, right? Than for me to be claiming pastor and then I'm having illicit relationship with my female members left, right, and center. I think a lot of our pastors need to get to that point where they can be real with themselves. And I'll tell you that there are some other pastors who, from now to tomorrow, those kind of temptations can't get to them because they are not just wired that way. Even if you come, five women come to their room, they won't think about that. So people need to be real with themselves and ask themselves what's more important. Is it me holding title as pastor and then wearing fine suits and then driving big Benz by Benz every Sunday? Meanwhile, because of my own lust or whatever it is, I've slept with my chorister's wife. I've slept with my drummer's girlfriend. I mean, we hear these things all the time. I mean, we just had a pastor TB Joshua's own story back in the day, right? So for me,
I even heard that he's been expunged from YouTube
All his videos?
Yeah, he's been expunged from YouTube.
Oh.
And the broadcast has been stopped on DSTV.
Imagine that. Yeah. Right. So for me, I think that pastors need to take that holistic view, that 360 view, and say, listen, what's more important? Me feeling important as a pastor or me ruining the lives of people who God has sort of, you know, handled to my care? I make a decision based on that.
Yeah, I think you are very introspective. You know, for you to have come to that conclusion,
yeah,
and then try to kind of remove yourself from a situation, you know, that puts your reputation in jeopardy. And there was a post that Sam Adelaja, Sunday Adelaja rather, the pastor in Ukraine that had the largest church in Ukraine and all. It was a post that he shared. I think I saw the post today. And it was about a young lady, you know, that was talking about how he stopped his Christianity stuff and all and everything. She's left Nigeria. You know, when they go out of Nigeria, they always develop this epiphany that kind of just tells them like, oh, that religion I've been practicing.
Yeah.
You know, and then they now go into maybe atheism and all those stuff and all. Yeah, she's one of those ones and all. And she was talking about pastors, just like you said, pastors that were, she had to carry their Bible, has to give them tithes.
Yeah.
When she was in school, when she was in 100 level, 200 level and stuff and all.
Mm-hmm.
Said it was when she got to 300 level that she now kind of like snapped herself back.
Yeah.
And then she started getting serious, stopped going to church, goes to church every week, you know, every week. And on Sundays, they will pay big bus. I'll transport them from campus to
main church.
The main church, you know, and all. That's what she did and all, you know. And I mean, all the experiences, you know, what she was saying, she had actually been to different churches because of her background. She grew up in a Catholic, a practicing Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
When she went into, school, she now happened to join maybe somebody, their parents' friends that attend Redeem. She was going to Redeem. She went to Winners and all and everything. So she experienced all those, she had also experiences and all.
Mm-hmm.
So she was able to kind of bring everything together and say, what has this thing done for me? You know? And the thing that I would say is that it is not the Christian faith that has done that to you. They are individuals that are not carrying that faith out well. That is why she had that experience. And all. People that are collecting money from her, people that probably want to sleep with her, people that probably want to, you know, and all those stuff and all. Yeah, so for me, I think it's just, I mean, like you said, you know yourself, you know your weaknesses and all, and protect yourself, you know, from those weaknesses, especially you have to be very introspective.
Yeah.
Protect yourself. And so you don't go to church again.
Not everybody needs to be a pastor.
Yeah, so you don't go to church.
And that's a different topic entirely about me not going to church.
Okay, I think we talked about
I mean, that's a whole different episode on this one. If we go into it, and maybe one day we will. Maybe one day
we will. I think we actually should, you know, because if we are saying all these things and we're trying to maybe
advise,
open people up to a lot of, you know, stuff that is happening around the church and all and everything, you know, like I said, the faith, Christian faith, is not itself that is bad. It's not what is bad, you know. There are circumstances that you find yourself that people are not representing well, you know, that makes you think that, oh, this thing, maybe this thing is not that and all. So you shouldn't use that to cheat yourself, you know, from actually experiencing, you know, that gospel,
that relationship, that Christian,
that Christ relationship.
So
I think we should talk about it maybe down the line.
Down the line. But for me, for now, my view remains not everyone should be a pastor, just because you have
not
the
everyone
gift
should be a pastor
of you know, understanding scripture. Maybe you can pray for someone and they get healed. Doesn't necessarily mean
no, but
start,
you but,
start up a ministry.
But, I mean, I don't know if you go to
and go on poop.
I don't know if you go to what's it called? If you go to Clubhouse, you know, I don't know if you go to Clubhouse. You know the audio app now, Clubhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, I started going to Clubhouse a lot when it was during COVID. You know, and there are new generation pastors there, audio pastors. I call them audio pastors. Yeah, that just like to be, you know, I mean, they like to be
heard.
Yeah, to be heard.
Not
to act like, you know, they know what they are talking about.
Yeah.
You know, they like to, you know, and then, you know, they can even get to a point where they would insult yourself. Like, you don't even know what you are saying. That, I mean, I know what I'm saying and yeah. all. You know, and I kind of laugh, really, because one of the things that I don't do, really, is number one, I've not set my eyes on you ever before.
Yeah.
I don't know your experience. I don't know your background. I don't know where you're coming from mm-hmm. and all. I like to kind of give that mystic, that mysticism about you. I like to give it respect, really.
Yeah.
You know, because I know where I'm coming from and I don't want anybody talking to me anyhow.
True.
You know, and all. So I would also accord that same respect to you because mm-hmm. I don't know where you're coming from and I don't want to disrespect you, having not met you before and all and everything. Yeah. So I want to believe that, you know, I mean, just like I'm coming from somewhere, you're coming from somewhere as well. So I'm going to extend that courtesy to you and all. But some people on Clubhouse, they just feel like they're the best thing to God, to humankind, you know? And then once they can put themselves in some, you know, do some photo shoot for themselves, they put themselves on that picture and all, they start feeling themselves. They start talking to people anyhow. And I'm like, and they're pastors. They call themselves prophet. If you want to know an app that has different titles, pastor, prophet, evangelist, Elijah this, you know, apostle this, archbishop this, go to Clubhouse. You see them, a lot of them there.
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing about pastors. You guys are not doing your ministry a good service at all. Number one, I already have, and that takes me back to the statement I made when I said, I heard Femi Larazo's statement and something jumped at me when he said, without the church, that there'll be trouble in the society. And I said, is the church doing more harm than good? My experience with people who have called themselves pastors in my relatively young life has always been negative. So today, when someone introduces himself as pastor, immediately my defense system comes up.
Do you know what I do? Do you know what I actually do now? If I see a friend request from Clubhouse and I see prophet this, I won't accept it. Prophet this or pastor this, I want you to identify yourself by your first name.
Yeah.
Let me experience you.
Yeah.
Let me experience that pastor about you.
Yeah.
Then I can now accord you that respect.
When I was in the bank, yeah. I had a senior colleague, he was a pastor. We worked together. He was one of the most horrible, most terrible human beings I had ever met. I mean, I used to think...
But do you know that they are the ones that like to be called pastor?
No, this one was even a pastor. They had a church.
No, but I'm saying that they like
to be called
that title.
Yeah, yeah.
Even in formal environment,
yeah.
that doesn't concern them, they like to be called...
He was a terrible nigga, I tell you. And I'm someone who believes that I work well with people, I can blend with different personality traits. This guy irritated me every single time. Horrible person. And I'm like, you're a pastor. I had a transaction with someone recently, was a pastor too. Man almost scammed me. In fact, scammed me. But I had to show him that even myself, I'm a Lagos boy.
You don't work.
Yeah.
You don't work. He's
a pastor. So, and I see this all the time. People who call themselves pastors.
Yeah.
And then when I look at the fruits of their own spirit, there's nothing about it that says you're really a pastor. So you are just demarketing again. The church and ministry, and I can say not everyone should be.
And
a
if you are,
in my view, not everyone, not all of these guys.
Yeah, and if you are imam, please put on roll on and put air freshener.
They don't believe in those things, deodorant and stuff.
That's what
I think.
So that's why they wear those things that cover themselves, they're smelling like this thing,
bro. That's how we see
Lagos. There is too much sun. Put on roll on.
No, but that's a good question. We should actually ask why do these imams and these guys don't believe in. I think they don't believe in going natural.
Do they bathe in soap? But don't forget that. Don't forget this religion stuff. We met it on earth, really.
Yeah.
You met it on earth, really. I don't think God like is so bad that he wants you to live a miserable life and just die and come back to him and come and have the best of life. If he's going to give you the best of life in heaven. Why do you think he wants to suffer you all through your life on earth?
On earth, yeah.
You know? Mm. So, I mean, some things we need to just add
IQ to it.
Common sense. The Bible says wisdom is profitable.
Intellectual quotient.
wisdom is profitable to direct.
Yeah.
There is wisdom in everything, everything. If you read Proverbs, there's a lot of wisdom there. I mean, I'm just saying, because I came from a family of Muslim and Christian, so
yeah,
I know what I'm talking about, really. So I'm not trying to throw shade or anything here, so mm-hmm. I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Anyways, yes, it is what it is. I mean, maybe one day we'll have that conversation.
No, we should have that conversation. We should have that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we are going to do for one pastor. Maybe it's one of those.
And bring on
and
board.
Bring the pastor, yeah, so that he can
true.
Come and defend
so he
their
can
faith.
Actually, yeah, give us his point of view.
Yeah. We that are the castaways.
He didn't.
Yeah, castaways. That's what they will say. If they hear us, talking now,
yeah,
they'll be praying. Or they'll be praying for us. They say, go and pray for those two guys.
Ministry of Reconciliation. We can be reconciled back to the fold. It's so funny when I have conversation with all these church pushers, and then they realize that this guy probably knows more than me, and then like they now go the angle of, you know, it's always good for us to have that fellowship. I thought you were gonna argue with me about why I was wrong before. Why are you changing your tactics? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's, I think that's where you do yourself a lot of good, really. See, so just study to show yourself approved, you know. The workman that is worthy of his reward and all. When you know the Bible, nobody can bamboozle you. If Irene talk, there are something, if Irene say something where you know, say, Irene, okay, I like you. You're a cool guy, but yeah, that one no go. You know, it doesn't mean that you are disrupting
him completely.
You are deplatforming him. Like,
yeah,
you're just saying, like, I don't agree with that, really. And that's fine, really. And I also think that if you're a pastor, you should be willing. What's it called? You should be willing to have people disagree with you.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that they also use as their manipulative skills. You know,
yeah,
manipulative scheme. Yeah, you can't question it.
I can't question them.
And, you know, it's the authority.
Anyways.
Authority that has spoken. You know.
Yeah, well, we used to respect constituted authority on the junction. So
constituted authority.
We don't have any.
The person that said it the last time, the person that said it, the person don't die now.
Yeah. Well, his words ring true. As far
constituted authority,
you have to respect constituted.
Constituted,
authority. Yeah. Respect to all you guys that are doing the ministry work.
Respect it's a to the job. Ones that are doing it
right.
Well, that are trying to get it right. Let me put it that way.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's because not an
that
easy
is
job,
yeah. That same. Is all you can do. Try to get it right and keep, you know, going in that direction.
Yeah.
You know?
That's as much time as we got on the junction. We're going to sign out, but I do hope that you've enjoyed this illuminating experience that we've had. If you have, let's get a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or WhatsApp. Hit us up. Let's get your thoughts. From us at the junction, we're signing out. We're going to catch y'all next week. Till then, stay jiggy. Resh, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Sebunana Usasa.